League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Feliz! La Pantanita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, here we go. Hour number two of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Man, those were two great interviews, I'll tell you. Omid Namazi of the Houston Dynamo setting the bar high. And then Edson Buttle comes on with some great stuff about the striker position and scoring goals and playing with David Beckham and getting great advice from hardened pros in Columbus. This is what it's all about when it comes to doing good interviews. These two guys took us in really good places here. You know, these days when I look to get people on to do interviews on this show, I want them to live up to it. I don't want it to be a sell job. I don't want it to be, I want it to be something that when I get done with the interview, I go, wow, that was a great interview. That was something for my listening audience to take a bite into. And those two interviews right there lived up to it beautifully. All right, this next interview, and this is the first of a series of doing some stuff with some of the local establishments here in Houston. Sig's Lagoon is a record shop down in Midtown. It's Midtown's only record store. It's on 3622 Main, right next to the Continental Club. It's a really cool area down there. It's kind of a throwback area. And coming on right now from Sig's Lagoon is the man who owns Sig's Lagoon, Tomas Escalante. Tomas, thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Hey, Glenn, thanks for having me.
Yeah, by the way, thanks a lot for pulling all those records for me this weekend. And then you dropped them outside. I paid with a credit card. I came, picked them up, and I got to listen to some great sounds on Sunday.
I'm glad. And what did you think of that Air album?
Very good. Air from the 90s. Did not know anything about them. Perfect coffee music in the morning. And then I needed another copy of The Who Live at Leeds, which you got me. And it had all kinds of really interesting copies of letters that went on in the day with The Who inside it. So you may not have charged me enough for that one.
No, it was just fine.
All right. So listen, let's just talk about your record store. And you know, you and I have gotten to talk. We had a great conversation on Sunday that could have went on forever. And then I was like, yeah, I better leave Tomas alone. But, you know, you obviously a musician, passion for the music, but also passion for the collecting. Tell me about where that all got started, because your store just has incredible memorabilia, incredible selection. Take us into that.
Gosh, my passion for music started when I was probably 5 years old. My parents divorced when I was really young, and my mom would take me to Austin. And the drop-off point for the goods, which was me, was actually the Armadillo. And it was close to where my dad lived and where my aunt lived, where my mom would stay when she dropped me off. And I was introduced to a gentleman named Phil Richardson, and he was this amazing vocalist and played trumpet with his band called Steam Heat. And at the time, he worked at this record store called Zebra. And that was the first time I was really turned on to a record store, and I didn't really look back since. I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to sing like Phil, and I want to work in a record shop. And ever since then, I was always looking to find a way to get into a record store, and here we are.
So you've had a life of following your passion. I mean, you're like me with soccer. I mean, you have had a life of following your passion and being involved with it on a daily basis. I don't think you can put a value on that, can you?
You can't. I mean, it's an old, overused adage, but you know, if you find something you love and that's your job and you're not really work, it's just a kind of work of passion and you don't feel like you're working at all. So I feel really lucky in that respect.
Tomas Escalante, Sig's Lagoon. It's on Main Street near the Continental Club in Midtown. I highly suggest you get in there and check it out when you can. You can also call there and you can have Tomas pull records for you, which he did for me, which was just, it gave me a break. It got me to drive a car. You know, I went down there with the mask on. I probably scared you, Tomas, but, you know, doing the social distancing is a big deal. So how often do you hear this story? Like me, I go back to New Jersey. I got away from vinyl. I got into CDs, and now all of a sudden I'm lugging all my vinyl back. I go out, I buy a Pioneer, receiver, some great speakers, and I'm back in the vinyl game, and I'm loving it. How often do you hear that story?
It's like a broken record. Sorry, I couldn't resist. No, I hear it a lot, and people don't, you forget how much you miss that sound, but you know, there's, you know, the crackle of a record, just hearing that versus, you know, a CD skipping, it's just like night and day. I mean, everything about the record, you know, if there's records you have that you can look at a tear in it or a marking and you can remember what you were doing, when you were doing it. It's like a timestamp, and that's what music is. You know, you don't really timestamp with downloads, but vinyl, you can timestamp just about anything.
2010, the return of vinyl began to kind of percolate, right? When do you think it kind of hit its height? And you know, it's still not the largest way for people to get their music. Obviously it's all digital now, but there is a large part of the, you know, there's a nice niche market there for vinyl records and all those things, the rawness of it, putting a needle on a record. And you're absolutely right. Every time I pull an album out that I had in college or childhood, there's a flashback to something that happened.
Absolutely. I mean, I always go back to like what, you know, when people ask you, what's the first album you bought? And when, you know, stepping back to like, I remember it was my birthday and I went to Zebra because Phil said, come over, come pick out an album out. And I picked the album I picked out was like, I did them a favor because this was like the most returned album ever. Because I was like, I want that Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band soundtrack, which is like the biggest stiff album in the history of it was returned platinum, I think, by the time it came out.
Yeah.
But I remember I got that, and I still remember that to this day, and I'm sure they were like loving it that I took that out there.
Oh man, I love that album. That's such a great album.
No, but this was the movie from the soundtrack.
The soundtrack movie. Oh yeah. Right. That had the Bee Gees in it.
The whole reason why I got that was because Steve Martin was in the movie.
That's awesome. Tomas Escalante joining us from Sig's Lagoon. It's in Midtown. Great vinyl record shop. So, you know, equipment-wise and getting back into the game, if people want to get back into the vinyl game, take us through how they would do that, or, I mean, how expensive is it? And then I would also like you to answer the question about used and then the new reissues that are coming out, because they're very different.
You know, a lot of people see the all-in-ones, and I've even carried them just because people ask for them, and I've actually stopped. I encourage people to stay away from that. It you know, some of them look really nice. They're not really built to last. It's worth spending, you know, $100. You know, you can get one decent one. You know, the arm isn't weighted, which is what we always encourage. But you can get a decent one. We carry Audio Technica. It's kind of like the workhorse of turntables, similar to Techniques. And you'll either need a receiver in speakers, or you can get the powered speakers. But I mean, if you're getting into it and you want to spend a little money, you can probably do that. Spending about $350 to $400 with everything you need. And it'll, you know, very economical, and that's why we always push Audio-Technica. We feel like it's kind of the workhorse, and get the bang for your buck.
And then you got the people that go way out with the Nakamichis and the Macintosh.
Totally.
And,
yeah.
Know, that are just off the charts.
I don't work in that hemisphere, man.
Yeah, neither do I. But you know, what type of person's coming in now? I mean, I see a lot of young people going vinyl, man, which is really cool.
It's all over, but it's definitely a lot of young people. I mean, those are the people that I'd get the most education from. I mean, the easiest thing for me to do is to hear what they're looking for. And if I get asked for it and I don't have it, then I'm carrying it. And that's how I've built my catalog up through the years. And it's some of my best-selling things are things that I've, like, was turned on by my customers.
Yeah, that's cool. We're talking to Tomas Escalante, Sigs Lagoon. You got all this memorabilia too, which is pretty amazing. I mean, is that collecting? Is that saving? Combination of both? What is that?
It's both. I mean, a majority of it came from a store that I worked at, where my wife worked at. It's where we knew each other before then, but we rekindled our friendship and eventually turned into something. It was a store called Sundance Records in San Marcos, Texas. A friend of mine named Bobby Bernard ran that store. And he basically, his walls were just covered with posters and cutouts and headlines and obituaries and everything of people, and, you know, whether it was music or pop culture. And basically when he kind of shuttered that store, semi-retired, he pulled everything down. And then one day we were talking and he said, well, why don't we just put it in your store and I'll just keep looking for vinyl. So that's what we're doing. He's out looking for it, and we've kind of recreated that vibe of Sundance with a kind of my touch of tiki flair that I started my store with. And it's kind of great. It's like 60 years worth of just pop culture memorabilia, posters that he's collected through the years.
Pretty incredible stuff. And I mean, I see some of that Rolling Stones memorabilia and I'm just like, oh my God, this is pretty incredible. Now, what about the relationship with the Continental Club, which is just such a legendary place, which is right on the corner there? I mean, it's like the perfect marriage, I think.
It is. I was basically doing tickets for them when I opened. At the time before I opened the store, I saw that they did an article on the area and how it was growing. And it was when it was just the Continental and Top of the Go-Go was talking about opening. And they said a record shop was opening there. And I called Pete and knew him from playing at the club regularly. I was in kind of a sort of a regular band that played there on Wednesday nights called Clouseau. And we talked and he said, well, that fell through. And I said, well, I've got some ideas. He said, well, let's talk to my buddy Bob and see what we can do. And eventually we turned it into a store. And it wasn't all vinyl at first. It was a lot of gifts. And honestly, the day I opened, I remember when Pete walked in the door and he said, man, this place looks great. I mean, I can't believe what you've done compared to what it looked like. And he sat down and, what are you selling? I didn't have any merchandise at the time. And so we grew that through the years. And now, I mean, we actually just expanded our current location. Our buddies next door decided to cut back on some of their business at the barbershop and the beauty salon, and we took over where Cat's Meow was and expanded our current location by another, I'd say, 500 or 600 square feet, because we were just busting at the seams because we got so much vinyl in there, and we're already outgrowing that spot. So but I mean, we couldn't be happier where we are. I mean, being next to the Continental Club is a gift. I've had some of the most amazing experiences. I mean, 2 years into it, when Ian McLaughlin was playing and Ronnie Wood showed up, was just like,
because the Stones were in town, right? The Rolling Stones were in town, and Roddy Wood shows up at Continental Club.
Yeah, it was really crazy how it happened. I mean, you know, it was obvious Ian had a plan and said, hey, I'm, you know, he talked to Pete and said, I'm going to see if so, you know, Ronnie can come over here. And Pete kind of gave me the heads up. And, you know, by 10 o'clock at night, I mean, I was like, why? It looked like it was just jam-packed with people walking around more than usual. And by the time they showed up, I mean, I was at the front door when Ronnie walked in, and the place was just electric. It was unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Sig's Lagoon, Midtown's only record store. Now, we're taking you to break, Tomas, with Born to Be Wild by Steppenwolf. You got two sentences. Why are these guys not in the Hall of Fame?
No idea.
Unbelievable. They should be in for this song alone. All right. Listen, Tomas, thank you so much for coming on at Sig's Lagoon Record Shop, 3622 Main Street, Midtown's only record store. Get down there. It's a great block right near the Continental Club. Tomas, thank you so much for tonight.
Thank you, too. And I got to tell you, I got to be able to put a plug in to get Doug Somm in the Hall of Fame. So I just, there you go.
There you go. Doug Somm, Texas legend, right?
Yep, that's right. Thanks for having me, Glenn.
Thank you, Tomas. All right, Born to Be Wild, Steppenwolf. We're taking a break with that. That's great stuff there with Tomas Escalante. Get down to Sig's Lagoon Record Shop next week. We're going to have Quinn from Cactus Records on, and Quinn's going to have some great stories to tell, too. All these guys are in it because they're just so passionate about music. So Quinn Bishop of Cactus will be on next week. Steppenwolf, Born to Be Wild. We're coming back. We got more to come.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 as we roll on here tonight. Again, big shout out to all those on the front lines who are putting it on the line for all of us and those who are fighting the coronavirus. Obviously, you've heard on my show that my nephew had it, and he's still, I'll tell you, struggling. He's finally tested negative after 6 weeks, but he's doing okay. He's had some other side effects, accelerated heart rate and different things. So I guess this, the lesson of him being on the show a couple weeks ago was if you're a young person and you're out there and you believe you can't get this and it can't affect you, you better think differently. Detroit City FC. Article in the BBC, in their sports side, the football team rising from America's biggest ruin. Now, my good friend at Fox 26 here locally, Ruben Dominguez, sent this to me. I had read this prior, and I had always thought about getting Sean on the show. So we're finally going to get him on. So Sean Mann, the chief executive officer, he's a co-owner of Detroit City FC, joins us now. Sean, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Yeah, hey, Glenn. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and first off, just how are you doing with the coronavirus, personally, your family, everything okay?
Yeah, no, we're fortunate. We're doing well. Obviously, Detroit's been hit particularly hard by it, so it's, you know, a bit surreal. It's been tough, but, you know, we're getting through it.
So let's talk about this concept because, you know, what you've done, you know, all across America, there's teams in lower tier leagues that are making noise. I mean, you've got this incredible supporters base. You guys have a lot of creative, organic ideas. You are representing Detroit. You are very connected with this Detroit feel and vibe. Just kind of give us and my listeners sort of how this idea was birthed and where you've carried it now in kind of a Cliff Notes version, because I know it's not an easy story to tell because of so many things happening.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I had lived overseas for grad school and several years after, and I came back to Michigan working in politics, really wanted to make a difference. Moved here into the city, bought a house, bought a few houses, rehab them, and, you know, have these amazing neighbors. I love my neighborhood, but, you know, just with the decline of Detroit, you know, we spent a lot of our free time boarding up vacant houses. This is, you know, 07, 08, 09, you know, during the our recession started way before the rest of the nation's and ended long after. But, I was trying to think of a fun way for neighbors to get together that involved boarding up houses. And what I created was a neighborhood-based, co-ed, adult, very, very recreational adult soccer league. And that just took off like lightning. That first year, we had 11 neighborhoods in the city represented. Now, 10 years later, we have 36 neighborhoods, over 1,000 participants, 90% of them are city residents. And it was through that I got to meet a group of guys. I met a lot of people and a lot of, great people across the city. 10 years ago now are business owners, politicians themselves, who started that league. But I was on a business trip by chance in Chattanooga, and I met one of the owners of Chattanooga FC. And I heard his story, what they had done there, and I was inspired, and I came home, and I roped in four friends who, with various talents or backgrounds who, I said, hey, I think we could do a minor league team in Detroit. Detroit's a major market, right? It's a historic sports town, but the teams, they've been around for generations. I love the Tigers, but they're not much different than, a team in Cleveland or a team in Chicago. And yet our friends in Detroit were all starting up small businesses that were helping change the narrative. And so, my pitch to those guys was, we could create a sports team that really, I think, captures this moment in Detroit. That's the small business equivalent of, the positive things happening here. And so back in 2012, the five of us each chipped in a little over $2,000 a piece, which was enough to buy a set of goals and some kits and pay an entry fee to NPSL. And, from there, lost sweat equity, girlfriends, now wives, collecting tickets, parents mowing the grass, leaning on, eventually fans and supporters, who just become huge advocates of the club, helping us build year over year over year to where we're at now.
Incredible story. And before I get into, kind of how you're handling this situation now, like all kinds of professional teams, talk about this fan base, too, because there's a quote in this article that says, quote, everyone would call Detroit a dead city. Part of what we do as a group is embrace criticisms people have of us, turn that into something that can't hurt us. If Detroit is a dead city, we're going to be the walking dead. We're going to show that there are still things happening here. So there's this great organic pride that everybody's kind of feeding off each other, right?
Yeah, I mean, our Northern Guard supporters, really the kind of focal point of our supporter culture. They are rabid, they are dedicated, they care first and foremost about, DCFC and Detroit, and they're unapologetic about it. And, they've been instrumental to, growing the club and really shaping the culture around us. And so, yes, they've certainly latched on to, from the very beginning to the skulls and the, rising from the dead kind of, motif. The way we've always approached it as a club, as a leadership, is that, we are the host of the party and they are the life of the party. And so, we don't overprescribe, our halftime's pretty subdued. We are pretty hands-off when it comes to our supporters. There's a level of trust and respect and relationship we've built up over the last decade. So, I think we allow them to go beyond what you'd find in a normal stadium. So there is smoke. There's not flares, but there is a lot of smoke. There's more adult language than you might hear, at least in a choreographed sense, than other sporting events. But, it's become kind of our staple. And really for us, in a pragmatic sense, it's what sets us apart from the major teams in town. Coming to our games, it has a better atmosphere. It is more exciting. It's more engaging. It is, been described as the most memorable sporting event in Detroit. We've leaned into those supporters who, frankly, they're our marketing department. We don't spend much money on, we don't spend money on billboards, TV commercials. It's all word of mouth. These folks are zealots who, bring their friends and family to every game.
Yeah, there's some incredible pictures in this article. And by the way, if you go to Facebook, Soccer Matters, I posted the article of Sean's club and his group's club Detroit City FC up there. It is an incredible read. There's some incredible images here. And it's really a story of Detroit, too. And it's an uplifting story because, in many ways, this supporters group is doing a lot of work off the field, a lot of good things in the community. Yeah, it's a little edgy on game day, but that's how you like it, right?
Yeah, I mean, right. Very charitable group of people. You know, we, my partners and I, the other owners, like, we live here in the city. We're very active and engaged, and so we've always tried to make a point of highlighting organizations that we know they're doing good work on the ground that probably don't get the attention that they're due. You know, it's not knocking United Way or anything like that, but, you know, they got the NFL. Like, we're going to highlight, you know, causes that are getting the attention. And that's something that resonates with our supporters have brought group stuff as well. You know, folks that really are, you know, doing good work here in the city. And, yeah, it's become one of our core, you know, features, that kind of charitable angle, getting back to the city. But then also just in general, like for us, we wanted to create something that was approachable and affordable and accessible. So, you know, we, owners and I, you know, we're white guys and we recognize that, you know, Detroit is like, you know, one of the great, you know, majority, minority cities here. And so, you know, I think we're constantly striving to, you know, from our youth ranks on up, trying to reach across and get as many people from the city and engage in games as possible. And yeah, we actually had a USA Today article, our youth program, which we fund with our beer sales. You know, it's predominantly Latino and Yemeni, and it's, you know, an amazing cross section of, you know, the future of the city and, you know, hopefully future city supporters.
So diverse. Sean Mann, Chief Executive Officer, co-owner, Detroit City FC, great logo, kind of a maroon and gold, very cool logo, obviously very organic in nature. You know, some of the things and the flares and the things your fans are doing, it's pretty incredible. It makes me want to come up and see a game. It's DETCityFC.com. That's where you go. Tell us about the situation now and you know, where you are now and what you can possibly do at this moment with the coronavirus and the league shutdown and everything else.
Yeah, obviously it's a horrible time to be in the business of gathering larger groups of people together on a regular basis. And, you know, we are not billionaires by any means. We have one partner that meets the fair league standards requirement, but, you know, we are very much a small business still. And so, yeah, it's tough. You know, we're trying to be as nimble as possible, you know, applying for every grant, you know, every loan imaginable. But we've got a path to get through this, you know, in terms of getting back on the field. Those are daily conference calls that, you know, after the last 6 weeks, I'm kind of burned out on, you know, using my phone or Zoom meetings. But, you know, we're in conversation with the other leagues, NISA is, and, you know, it's just figuring out the testing and figuring out the right protocols so that the players can start safely training again, get back on the field, and, you know, ideally we should find a path to, you know, get fans into the stands as well. But I'm less optimistic about that in the near term.
He's Sean Mann, Chief Executive Officer, co-owner, Detroit City FC. You know, what's the plan right now? You know, I'm wondering what teams are doing now when they've got season ticket holders and, you know, people are automatically billing them. What do you do with that? How do you handle that with people that maybe don't have jobs now? I mean, I can imagine these are incredibly difficult decisions.
Yeah, I mean, we are, NISA just announced yesterday that our spring season had been canceled, which was set to end. We're playing on a more European, or I think more, I would describe it as like a Mexican calendar, with it set to end in early June, the spring season. So, you know, no surprise, we canceled spring season. You know, we're looking to get back going in August with some preseason in July. But, you know, we sent a note out to our fans, you know, our season ticket holders, all of them. And, you know, with the exception of one individual, no one asked for a refund. And actually, you know, we've got... Wow. Just flooded with social media comments and emails, people saying, you know, we don't want a refund, you know, we don't want to hurt the club. You know, Detroit News even did an article about it today. But, you know, just, I think, you know, because, you know, me and my partner is like, you know, we've been, yeah, I mean, we are, you know, the fans. So they know that, you know, we're taking out lines of equity on our houses to keep the thing going. So
can you repeat what you just said, Sean? Just repeat what you just said.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're normal guys. Like, we are, yeah, I mean, we are taking out loans.
You took a mortgage out on your house?
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, that's what we've been doing to keep this organization going. So, yeah, I mean, this is, it means a lot to people here in this community. It means a lot to us. And, you know, we're not going to let this be the end of the club by any means. So, yeah, we're taking the measures necessary to keep it going. So, yeah, I mean, I think people know us. We have our own club bar in the middle of our training facility, our field house. And, you know, you go up there 5 o'clock when we're punching out and we have fans rolling in. And, you know, so people know us and they know what we're doing to keep this club going, and they appreciate that. But, you know, that being said, obviously, you know, we have had a few fans who said, like, hey, I need that $150 back or that $200 back. And, yeah, like, we're going to give them that money back. But for the most part, what we've been telling people is, like, you know, give us a little time. Let's see what the rest of 2020 looks like, and help us build out some, you know, give us a little bit of time to build out some, you know, plans and some alternatives for folks for what the rest of this year in 2021 is going to look like.
Sean, this is great stuff. I thank you very much. By the way, Detroit City FC plays in NISA, which is the National Independent Soccer Association. Sean, I hope you're taking care of yourself because you're under a lot of pressure. But it's guys like you that are the backbone of the sport in the United States and, you know, putting these clubs together and coming up with these amazing ideas and letting the growth come organically. So big hats off to you and Detroit City FC. It's DETCityFC.com. Sean, take care of yourself. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. What a great story.
Great. Appreciate it, man. Thanks.
All right. And by the way, their manager is Trevor James. And I didn't even get to Trevor because we got up on this commercial break and just wanted to put a shout out there to the manager of Detroit City FC. That's Trevor James. Sean Mann. Great stuff from him. Chief Executive Officer. Yeah, he's got skin in the game. Put the mortgage of his house up for his team. Unbelievable. Take a break here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. It certainly does to Sean Mann and Detroit City FC. This interview was brought to you by John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. They're going to work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. Any kind of accident you get in, you need representation. DaspitLaw.com, bilingual, 713-322-HURT. Give them a call, and they will work for you 24-7, nights and weekends, just like they do for getting the sport of soccer on the radio here on ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Psychedelic Furs, song called Heaven. It was a great interview with Detroit City FC CEO Sean Mann. I just got a nice message here from their coach, Trevor James, who many would know from Major League Soccer and over in England. Right now, we're going to switch gears, though. NWSL, Houston Dash, Veronica Latsko joins us now. Veronica, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming on the show tonight. No, I can't give you a BMW. If I could, I would, but I can't. Because I heard the wonderful Paloma Alatorre said that you were interested in the BMW, so we'll see down the road. One day I would love to give BMWs out on this show. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on. And listen, you're a great story. I've enjoyed watching you with the Houston Dash. I also I believe I called maybe one of your games when you were at the University of Virginia. But I want to talk a little bit about you coming back from such a severe injury, where you are now. And kind of the mental side of that, because this was a serious injury you had.
Yeah, so it was definitely a struggle, but it helps that I had so many incredible people around me to make it so much easier than what I thought it would be. Obviously, tearing your ACL is a horrific event that I don't wish upon any athlete, but it was my second time doing it, so I kind of had the gist of what I needed to do to get back to competing, and honestly, I just wanted to get back at it as soon as possible and be ready for the NWSL season whenever it starts. So going to Australia and getting the work in there and being able to get games under my belt before the NWSL season was huge for me.
So you just came back from Sydney FC. I mean, when you came back from the ACL, and you did it in remarkably quick time, and I think a lot of people were pretty impressed how quickly your recovery was, including your coach, James Clarkson. When you get back on that field to actually play in a real competitive game, what goes through your mind?
Well, the first game that I came back for, honestly, I was just so excited to be back on the field that I didn't even think about re-injuring my ACL or really any kind of like the downsides of it. I was just so excited to be back on the field playing the game I loved. It was mostly just trying to prepare for that moment as best as I could. And with that, it was putting in all the work in the months prior. So whether it was me in the gym at month one or me in the gym or on the field at month six, it was just trying to be as ready as possible.
Talking to Veronica Lotsko of the Houston Dash, and after you got injured, you know, one of the things people said during the year was that, you know, this team could have been a different team with Veronica around, not only how good of a soccer player she is, but you do have this type of spirit that would make you, that I've heard from others, this personality, very, very positive, that would make you a good bet to come back very strong from an ACL injury. Where does all that wonderful positivity come from?
Oh, my gosh. Whoever's telling you this, I definitely want them in my corner 24/7 because they sound like the best hype man ever. but
I can't tell you who told me that. But
but I mean, I was just kind of raised that way. My parents are both very, very positive people, and I grew up being under the impression that hard work does pay off, and if you can't beat them with talent, then you can beat them with hard work by running twice as much, by doing twice as much effort. And yeah, that's just kind of the motto that I've lived by growing up and to this day. And honestly, for me, if a person's able to work hard and bring that talent and effort to every single training session and every single game, it's hard not to be positive because you see that at the professional level. No one's just slacking off. You can't afford to do that. So when you have teammates that are so incredible and they're able to be positive influences as well, it's hard not to be positive.
So how are you and your teammates getting through this now? I mean, obviously you're at home. You're trying to train on your own. I'm sure you're doing Zoom meetings and things. But, you know, what are you learning during this time period?
Well, honestly, patience has been a pretty big thing that we've all been learning. It really does. It's not great that we can't see each other because obviously we're all best friends and we all really want to be hanging out with one another at this time and getting better and playing the game that we love. But it's for the best of everybody that we're able to stay separate and save a life by being in quarantine and staying apart from people. So, I mean, it's tough, and we are getting through it with Zoom meetings and Zoom bingo, which was great. That was a lot of fun. And honestly, just kind of staying in constant communication with each other and being ready for the season whenever it starts.
Talking to Veronica Lotsko of the Houston Dash, and comes from Pennsylvania. By the way, it was only a couple seasons ago that you were an all-ACC first-team selection at Virginia, and you had game winners in one season against Pitt, Louisville, Syracuse, St. Francis, and Pepperdine. Five game winners in one season. That's not bad.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. Honestly, it's so crazy. It feels like forever ago that I was at Virginia. Like, I see girls that are getting drafted, and I'm like, wow, I'm old. You were a freshman when I was a senior. But it's all I love that school, and it definitely helped make me the player that I am today. I can't imagine you've gone anywhere else.
How about as a youth player? Who were some of your major influences, and who were some of the as coaches and influences as a youth? And then take me into who would be some of the players that you looked up to when you were growing up playing this beautiful game.
Well, I guess for me growing up, Pittsburgh, now it's become more of a hotbed place, but for soccer, it wasn't some crazy, huge soccer arena, or at least Western Pennsylvania wasn't. And I was fortunate enough that I had coaches that were so invested in me and invested in my development and somehow saw my potential in the skinny-looking girl that was awkwardly running around the soccer field and invested so much time in me and was able to get me the opportunity of going to an incredible college. And I guess in terms of role models, one has always been my dad and my mom. The way that they go about life is just, it's unreal. They attack it with everything they have, and they always told me that no matter what, whatever I'm invested in, I'm 100% invested. And if that's what I do and I love it, then the sky is the limit. And they said that the moment that I stop loving soccer is the moment when I know that it's time to step away. And I haven't experienced that yet, and I hope to not experience that in at least a few more years. But, yeah. And in terms of my soccer influences, Abby Wambach, she's been incredible to look up to. And honestly, like, you have your, like, Mia Hamm, who was also incredible, especially when I was younger, looking up to her and being like, oh, my gosh, I want to be a goal scorer. Like, look at the way that she's able to love and cherish the game. And you can see the effort that she puts into the field every step that she made on it. It was just, it was incredible to watch her play and to watch Abby Wambach play. And to almost be able to play in the league at the same time as Abby would have been incredible. But unfortunately, I didn't get to that point in life until a little bit later.
Talking to Veronica Latsko of the Houston Dash. How's it going to be different this year? Amber Brooks is gone. Kalia Ojai. Tell me why it's going to be different for the Houston Dash, and it'll be the first season once you get going that you get into the playoffs. What's it going to take?
I mean, you have an incredible group of girls here. And the amazing thing is that everyone is, it's not that everyone's super young or everybody's super old and veteran. It's the perfect mix of they've been in the league for a couple of years now. They have starts under their belt. They have seasons under their belt. Some of them even have playoff experience under their belt. And you're bringing that kind of experience with also a growth and development mindset. So these girls that you bring in, they're ready and eager to compete and to learn and to develop the Houston Dash as a playoff team, as a championship team. So I think the vibe that I get from all the girls on the team right now is that we're not settling for just playoffs. We are settling for number one. We're settling for a championship, and we're so ready to get after it that maybe this is a feel at every beginning of the season, but honestly, I haven't felt this way in a long time, and we're all just so raring to get out on the field, and it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Houston Dash, Veronica Latsko. Who out of some of the new players have impressed you with that sort of attitude that it's going to help take you over the top?
The girls that I've probably been in contact most with are the forwards, because we meet as a group via like Zoom and Microsoft Teams probably at least once a week. So I'd say Katie Stengel has really impressed me with just like her high standards that she has. So she's which is amazing. Like, we should have those high standards as a professional women's soccer team. Like, we should have the standard that we want to be number one. And especially in such an incredible league with such a depth, we should be able to achieve that. That's what I'd probably who has impressed me the most in terms of her just ability to change the vibe of a room, even if it's over video.
Yeah. Well, listen, Veronica, just have to let you know we're about to close this show down for the night. I really appreciate you coming on. I wish you the best of luck. Your story coming back is a fantastic one. I've enjoyed watching you play the game, and I'm looking forward to seeing you back on the field in the NWSL with the Houston Dash as soon as it can possibly happen. And I know you're raring to go. And by the way, when you mentioned what have I learned during this and you said patience, I was pretty impressed because you have to have a lot of patience during rehab as well. So that was pretty impressive. That was a pretty impressive answer. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, that's Veronica Lotsko, Houston Dash. You know how talented she is, coming back from an ACL injury, has fought her way back, and is looking forward to getting back on the field, like all the professional athletes on the Houston Dash and the Houston Dynamo, Major League Soccer, you name it. It's a different time for athletes because your feelings are around training and playing in front of fans. All right. That does it for tonight here. Big shout-out to Victor Ariza, Andrew Carlson, also to Nick Sharara handling the show beautifully tonight. Some really, really good interviews. A big thank you to Omid Namazi, Edson Buttle, Tomas Escalante, Sean Mann, and, of course, Veronica Lotsko. Podcastarena.com, Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Love for you to hit me up there. Also get over to Facebook Soccer Matters, Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock. And GlennDavisSoccer.com. How is that for a bunch of shameless promotion? Until next Tuesday, good night.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.